ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 नारायणं नमस्कृत्य
नष्टप्रायेष्वभद्रेषु
नित्यं भागवत
सेवया
भगवतीरुक्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिके. So we continue our reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 3, text number 8. The chapter entitles Talks Between Lord Shiva and Sati. Sati Uvacha,
Sati Uvacha,
Prajapate,
Prajapate,
Te,
Te,
Swasurasya,
Swasurasya,
Sampratam,
Sampratam,
Niryapita,
Niryapita,
यज्ञमहाउत्सव किला च वयं
च
तत्र
तत्र
अविसारम
वामा
ते
यदि
अर्थिता
प्रजापते
प्रजापते
ओम दक्ष
ओम दक्ष
ते
ते
योर
योर
स्वसुरस्य
स्वसुरस्य
ऑफ योर फादर फादर इन लॉ
ऑफ योर फादर इन लॉ
संप्रातम
संप्रातम
नाउडेज
नाउडेज
निर्यापिता
निर्यापिता
हैज
बीन स्टार्टेड
यज्ञमहाउत्सव
a great sacrifice
किला
certainly
वयम
we
चा
and
तत्र
there
अभिसरामा
may go
वामा
oh my dear Lord Shiva
ते
your
यदि
if
अर्थिता
desire
आमि
these
विबुधा
demigods
प्रजन्ति
are going
he
because
Translation and Purport by Srimad Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada
ki jai.
Sati said, my dear Lord Shiva, your father-in-law is now executing a great sacrifice and all the demigods, having been invited by him, are going there. If you desire, we may also go. His response to the translation. Sati said,
my dear Lord Shiva,
Your father-in-law is now executing a great sacrifice.
And all the demigods,
having been invited by him,
are going there.
If you desire,
we may also go.
Report.
Sati knew of the tension between her father and her husband, but still she expressed to her husband, Lord Shiva, that since such sacrifices were going on at her father's house, and so many demigods were going, she also desired to go. But
she could not express her willingness directly, and so she told her husband that if he desired to go, then she could also accompany him. In other words, she submitted her desire very politely to her husband. Om Agyanata Vyanata Sanyanata Nasalakaya Chakshuram Vitamne Tasmai Shishuramne Chaitanya Mano Vishnu Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swamirupa Vandamaya Nidhavati Swakadantikam Vande Nam Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakambam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Shastri Rupam Sakhadatam Sahaganapadanatam Vitamtam Sajivam Sāvaitam Sāvadhūtam Parijana Sahitam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahavarna Valita Sri Vishalakamitam Shara He Krishna Karuna Sibhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanata Namastate Tattamachan Dhova Nani Agarate Vrata Vishwari Shikshavam Shite Devi Pranamami Hare Priya Panchakalpataru Vyasa Kattavasam Dhuvaya Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasada Gaur Bhaktavinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna So we have come to the very wonderful section of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, just a little bit of background, what is that's what happened on the discussion so far. So you probably remember from the third canto that Devahuti, Mother Devahuti had three sisters. Does anyone remember the names? Akuti, Prasuti, and Devahuti. There were three sisters and two brothers, Uttanapada and these were the sons and daughters of Swayambhu Manu. So we have heard the story of in details the lineage of Devahuti, which she had nine daughters and one son, Lord Kapiladev. Then the other sister of Devahuti, Akuti, she was married to Prajapati Ruchi. And Ruchi was... So she had, they had two children, Dakshina and Yajna. So here, what we're hearing in the description of the third sister of Devahuti, Prasuti, who was married to Prajapati Daksha. So Prajapati Daksha and Prasuti had 16 daughters. So the 13 of those daughters were given to Dharma. And one was given to Agni, one was given to Pitriloka, and the last one, last daughter was Sati. She was married to Lord Shiva. So, and the first chapter on this fourth canto, it describes all the lineage of the daughters of Manu. So when Maitreya was describing this the lineage, when we came to Sati. How Sati was married to Lord Shiva, and she did not have any children. At that point, who's taking instruction from Maitreya, inquired from Maitreya Rishi, how come that Sati and Lord Shiva didn't have any children? So he said, Lord Shiva, the spiritual master of the entire universe. This is the Vidura is speaking here in the text 16 of the first chapter. Lord Shiva, the spiritual master who is of the entire world, is free from enmity, is peaceful personality, and always satisfied with himself. He is the great among the demigod. How is it possible that Daksha could be inimical towards such an auspicious personality? So this is the question that was posed by Vidura to Maitreya Rishi. Then the Maitreya Rishi starts to explain, he starts to narrate the whole incident between Lord Shiva and Daksha. So as the story goes, the Daksha was performing a sacrifice where he invited all the prominent deities of the universe, universal administrators, such as Brahma, Shiva, Indra, Varuna, Chandra, all the demigods were present in that yajna. And so this was the sacrifice arranged by the Prajapati Daksha. So, and at that assembly, when Daksha entered the assembly of the arena, everybody as a respect, because Prajapati is the head of the Daksha is the head of the Prajapatis. Prajapatis are those who are the early progenitors of the universe, where they populate the universe. So he was the head of the Prajapatis. So as a respect, offering a respect to a personality, everybody stood up. But two personalities didn't. They were? Lord Rama and Lord Shiva. Lord Rama didn't stood up because Daksha was his son. So father, as an etiquette, doesn't have to pay respect as a and Lord Shiva, he didn't stood up. I mean, in the private conversation we will hear later why he didn't stood up, because he was meditating on Vasudev, or he was in deep meditation, so he didn't. So Daksha got offended because he considered Lord Shiva as his son-in-law, because Sati was married to him. So he expected the respect from his son-in-law, which he considered as a junior in his social. No, so he got upset, and in his frustration or anger, he said many impalatable words to Lord Shiva, and he blasphemed Lord Shiva. To the point where he cursed Lord Shiva, because Lord Shiva is one of the great personality and the demigod. He cursed Lord Shiva that he will not have a share on any sacrifice that being performed. The Lord Shiva will not have a share. That's the curse Daksha. Daksha cursed Lord Shiva that he will not have the curse, the sayer of the sacrifice. So, seeing this incident, who is the follower of Lord Shiva, his great servitor, he did not like it. And he protested that, and in fact, he protested and he also cursed. He said, anyone who accepted Daksha as the most prominent personality and neglect Lord Shiva because of envy, envy is less intelligent. Because of visualization and duality, he will be bereft of transcendental knowledge. So this is one of the curse that was Nandishwar he encountered. So Nandishwar further criticizes those who present there at the fire sacrifice that he even cursed Daksha, that because he had blasphemed the Lord Shiva, he is the great personality, you will, within a short time, you will have the face of a goat. So this is Nandishwara. And further he said, he says, insulted Lord Shiva, those who have become a dull as a matter by cultivating materialistic education and intelligence are nationally involved in fruitful activities. Such men have purposefully insulted Lord Shiva. May they continue in the cycle of repeated birth and death. This is another curse Nandishwar. And further also says may those who are envious of Lord Shiva, being attached by a flowery language of enchanting Vedic promise, who have thus become dull, may always remain attached to fruitful activities. And further he goes, so he now curses those who are present there, did not protest. In those brahmanas, priests, those who did not object to them, even he curses. These brahmanas take to education, austerity, and vows only for the purpose of maintaining the body. They shall be devoid of discrimination between what to eat and what not to eat. They will acquire money in begging from door to door simply for the satisfaction of the body. So at this point, Bhrigu Muni, now he protests because now of the Nandishwar, even he blasphemed the Vedas, also blasphemed the Brahmins. So Bhrigu Muni protests at this point, and Bhrigu Muni says, one who takes the vow to satisfy Lord Shiva or follow such principles are certainly become atheist. So now the Bhrigu Muni is a counter-cursing. And so on and so forth. It goes on between this cursing and counter-cursing that takes place between the followers of Lord Shiva and followers of Daksha. So finally, Lord Shiva, seeing all these disturbances, he leaves the arena along with his followers. And so the yajna continues, that particular yajna continues, they finish it, it lasts for a long time, and then finally the yajna has been concluded, demigods have returned. And for after some time, Daksha again arranges the second sacrifice. In this sacrifice, he purposefully does not invite Lord Shiva and Sati. Because in the first sacrifice, this episode took place. So therefore, he purposefully didn't invite. So what we hear yesterday, that Sati came to know
that this sacrifice has been taking place at father's place. And today's verse, she's expressing her desire to actually go and meet her sisters and family and everybody in that great yagya. She wanted to partake in this go back. So this is thus far just a little background of what's taking place. So today, this is where Mother Sati is expressing her desire to go to her father's place. So this narration is in Srimad Bhagavatam. What every narration, every story, every incident in Srimad Bhagavatam is to, there is an instruction, there is something to follow. So this particular the pastimes which have been described here is what we learn from it is the how not to make a Vaishnava aparadha. This is the foremost teaching on this particular section of Bhagavatam is teaching us how it's detrimental for our devotional progress for making Vaishnava aparadha. So here, Lord Shiva is in Srimad Bhagavatam in 12th canto, we find that Lord Shiva is described as Vaishnavanam Yatha Sambho. Amongst all the Vaishnavas, Lord Shiva is the greatest Vaishnava. Nimna Ganam Yatha Ganga. It says amongst all the flowing rivers, the Ganga is the highest. Devanam Achyuto Yatha. Amongst all the deities, Achyuta is the topmost. Vaishnavanam Yatha Sambho. Amongst all the Vaishnavas, the Sambho, the Siva or Siva is the highest. This is in Srimad Bhagavatam, 12th canto, chapter 13, verse number 16. Purananam Idam Yatha. Amongst all the Puranas, Srimad Bhagavatam is the highest. Yeah. So here we are hearing this and the great Vaishnava being blasphemed. Being a Vaishnava, Lord Shiva has just, without saying, he just left. So, what is the first offense against the holy name?
Blasphemy.
Satam Minda Namna Param Aparada. Blasphemy of the devotees is the highest aparada you can make. This is in Padma Purana's way. These 10 offenses we narrate in the morning, they are from Padma Purana. And Satam Minda Nama Param Aparada. Satam refers to Vaishnavas. Param Aparada. It doesn't mean it's just aparada. When it refers to param, means the greatest. We should avoid Vaishnava aparada. So, who's Vaishnava? Now we say we should not make Vaishnava aparada. We should also know who's Vaishnava. And simple definition, Haridas Thakur in Harinam Chintamani. This question was actually asked by Lord Chaitanya to Haridas Thakur. Who is Vaishnava? What is the quality of Vaishnava? And Haridas Thakur says, Hena Sadhu Mukhe Yerbe Suni Eka Nama Vaishnava Boliya Tare Koriba. Sadhu Mukhe, in the sainty personalities,
यदि सुनी एक नाम, he says एक means one. If a saintly person chants the holy name of the Lord once, एक नाम वैष्णव बोलिया, he is the वैष्णव. And Haridas Thakur says, Tare Koriva Pranam, I offer my respect to the Vaishnava. Vaishnava is the highest position. That highest position is the process is such a simple chant the holy name. How simple it is. Any person from from whose mouth once I hear the holy name, I call the Vaishnava. I offer my obeisances. This is Harinam Chintamani, chapter 4, verse 48. This is Haridas Thakur speaking. And he also further describes, from the moment Lord Krishna's holy name enters his mouth, by the holy name's power, he attains all good qualities. And as we have seen in practical, that those who are even coming from a very different background, may not be in a Vaishnava, it could be any background. We could see practical example, those who have adopted, chanted the holy name, all the great qualities come. We have seen practical example, we just in our ashram, we have like a Philip Prabhu. If you see in practical, 1 year, 2 years ago in our Prabhu, so many of them, once they chant the holy name, what they were, what are they now? We're seeing in practical example all the great qualities that comes. Further he says, Ehena Vaishnava Ninda E Jane Kori Noroke Podive Se Janma Janmantari. Anyone criticizes the Vaishnava falls into goes into a hell. Noroke Polive Sei Janma Jamantare, not even once. This is birth after birth. This is Haridas Thakur speaking here. They will stay in the hell's evil. Birth after birth. So therefore, Vaishnava should not be blasphemed. Vaishnava nikate yadi vaise katha chana deha vaite hana haya Krishna shakti nisarana. If for a few moments one stays near Vaishnava, one will come into a contact with Krishna's power coming from the Vaishnava. See how great exalted the person, I mean, the Vaishnava is. This is Haridas Thakur glorifying the Vaishnavas. If for a moment one stays near Vaishnava, we have seen practical example, His Divine Vishnu Prabhupada. He went to West, and all those devotees who took physically, I mean in terms of time, what was the time they had association with Sri Prabhupada? Maybe a day? Maybe just once? In the class, some of the devotees were like dedicated their lives really. Not many, not long. But this is the proof that Haridas Thakur's statement. If for a moment one stays near Vaishnava, one will come to contact, one will come into a contact with Krishna. That is a practical example we see in our lifetime. So Lord Shiva is the greatest Vaishnava. He is being blasphemed here. If you see Lord Shiva's any of the Lord Shiva's photo, what is he doing? He's got a Rudraksha.
bass on his hand, and he's chanting the glories of, he's meditating on Vasudev, Sankarsan, or Krishna. As he, we will hear next coming chapter, in this same chapter actually, Sati and Lord Shiva, Sati is trying to convince Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva is saying, no, it's not good. And in this conversation he mentioned, Sattvam Visuddham Vasudeva Savditam Yaihirti Yatra Puman Aparta. Sattveja tasmin bhagavan vasudeva hi adokshire me manasa vidhiyate. He says, Lord Shiva is speaking here, I am always engaged in offering obeisances to Vasudeva in pure Krishna consciousness. Sattvam visuddham. Consciousness, visuddham is very pure. Vasudeva. So he is always engaged in, what is Lord Shiva doing? This is Lord Shiva himself speaking. I am always engaged in offering obeisances to Lord Vasudeva in pure Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is always pure consciousness in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Vasudeva, is revealed without covering. And further down the same canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when he is speaking to Prachetas, the Prachetas were the sons of Prachinibharis. When the sons were ordered to take responsibility of the administration and get married and procreate further, they went to do a tapasya. So they meditated on Lord Vishnu. I'm sorry, Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva appeared to them and he instructed. There's a beautiful narration, the beautiful prayers of Lord Shiva to Lord Sankarsan Vasudeva. Shiva Stuti. In this particular he says, a person who executes his occupational duty properly for 100 births, this is Lord Shiva speaking again, becomes qualified to occupy the post of Brahma. And if he becomes a more qualified, he can approach Lord Shiva. A person who is directly surrendered to Lord Krishna or Vishnu in unalloyed devotional service is immediately promoted to the spiritual planet. Lord Shiva and other demigods attend this planet after the destruction of material world. Where here, what the Lord Shiva making point is that for the Vaishnavas, they can return back to Godhead for eternity, or back to Godhead in this very lifetime, very short period of time. Whereas us, he's saying himself, us, or you know, us means Brahma, Shiva, any of the prominent demigods who are devotees, who have taken the responsibility of administrating the universes, if they are qualified, they have to wait until the end of the universe, or destruction of the universe, then they may be eligible. But for the Vaishnavas, that's not the case. They can return, go back home, back to Godhead, in this lifetime. Very short time. We have a lifetime of what? 100 years? 50% is gone in? Sleeping. 50 years remain. Huh? Even out of that, 5-10 years is gone in childhood, playing. Out of that, remaining, some gone in youth. What is the time? Even in that time, very small period of time, we are eligible to return back to Godhead. Whereas these demigods, or the great personalities, they will have to wait for millions and millions and millions and trillions of years. Lord Brahma lives for 311 trillion years. That's his lifetime. If he's qualified, then he can return. That's that period. That's a long period. And for us, it's a fraction of that. We have that eligibility. So that's this is the glory of Lord Shiva. He's such a great personality. He's being blasphemed here. Therefore, the lesson for us is to not to make any apparat. There are three types of apparat you can make to Vaishnava. One is kayana, by physical, manasa, by mind, thinking ill or thinking bad of vacha, by words. Because we were just reading about the Bhrigu Muni, I'll just briefly I'll tell you a story of how these the story of Bhrigu Muni is narrated in the chapter, the 10th canto, chapter I think 89, when these great sages got together in the bank of River Saraswati, and they were performing great sacrifice. And in that sacrifice, they wanted to actually find out who is the greatest amongst these three personalities, Brahma, Vishnu, and Mahesh, because they are the Gunavata, they are the... So they wanted to actually have the evidence to say which one is the highest. So they got together, discussed, and they have chosen Bhrigu Muni. Does anyone remember who Bhrigu Muni is? Whose son is he? Lord Brahma. He is one of the, he is actually the son-in-law of Karma Muni. Devahuti's nine daughter, he married more than one of the nine daughters of Devahuti, so he's the Lord Brahma's son, great Brahmana. So he was chosen to find out these three personalities. So Bhrigu Muni went to Lord Brahma. When Lord Brahma came, he did not stand. And Lord, seeing Lord, this, Lord Brahma was upset. He's my son. I am coming here. As a respect, he should be standing up and paying respect. But he did not. So he showed the bodily, his bodily gesture, the anger. So Bhrigu Muni understood that, okay. And so he's not the greatest. Then he went to Lord Shiva. When he reached Lord Shiva, Lord Shiva came, he was so happy to see his brother, because Lord Shiva and Bhrigu are brothers. Because Lord Shiva came from Brahma's forehead. So they considered as a brother and also in relation. So when he saw Bhrigu Muni, he was so happy, so glad, he wanted to go and embrace him. But Bhrigu Muni said, no, stay back. Because you live in the kind of crematory and you got all the ashes and you're so dirty. He's just physically, verbally. And Lord Shiva got furious. In fact, he wanted to even take a trident and he wanted to physically attack him. So he understood, okay, Lord Shiva is also not the highest. So he went to Lord Vishnu. And when he reached there, actually, he physically kicked
Lord Vishnu on his chest.
At that time, Lord Vishnu was actually he was sleeping on the lap of resting on the lap of Mother Lakshmi. He got up and paid his respect, and he said, "Oh my dear sage, your feet are such a soft, gentle feet. My chest is so hard. It might have hurt. You might have got hurt because you kicked my hard chest. Please come here." So Mrityu Muni understood the greatness of Lord Vishnu. So he concluded he's the highest. So three types of offenses being made here. One is mind to the mind. When he went to Lord Brahma, he didn't say anything. It was just all mental level. When he went to Lord Shiva, he offended through these the words. He said, "Oh, you're living in a filthy, you're dirty, I don't want to embrace you." Huh? When he went to Lord Vishnu, physically kicked. That's even highest. See, if you look at the gradation of the aparad, the mental aparad of the mind, the offense you make through your mind is considered less. The verbal is higher. Physically, somebody punching or kicking is even highest. So that should be done. So in this way, Lord Shiva is the greatest Vaishnava, and so we're hearing the lesson for us is to not to make any Vaishnava aparadha. So I'd like to conclude here, so it's getting so I'd like to ask any questions or any comments or any clarifications or corrections, please.
On Daksha committed an offense. Oh, you see, there's many instances in Srimad Bhagavatam when some great personality they commit offense. How? Like, it's not like the intelligence, they're very high personalities and they're intelligent, they're very intelligent, they're much more intelligent than human beings. Mm-hmm. So, how can they commit offense, like, you know, to such a great personality, to Lord Shiva and so on? Is it, because I don't understand how is it possible for them to commit if they're so intelligent.
So Yaragura's question is, these personalities like Daksha are such a great personalities. They were the first sons of Brahma and great personalities. How is that possible that they could not discriminate or they could not able to see the great greatness of Lord Shiva, and how could they actually make this kind of offense? Sorry?
Sorry,
Bhagavatam was not presented?
No, I mean, he committed such a Vaishnava aparadha, right? He might not have written books at that time.
At that time, actually, the reading books may not be, it's all the knowledge was heard, Shruti, as those times. See, the Bhagavatam was in the book form is just presented like 5,000 years ago, because our intelligence has gone down. At that time, all the knowledge was actually received through hearing. So being directly sons of Brahma, of course he had all the knowledges, otherwise how would he be performing all these great the sacrifices? He did have knowledge, that knowledge was passed on to him. But one thing that I understand, understand is that false ego is because Daksha has been made in charge of all this, the chief of the Prajapati, and he's through his opulence, through the position, the power, everything that had overridden. Because remember, these personalities are also great personalities, but they are still in the material world. All these modes do work on regardless of a little human or a little child or an elderly or even demigods.
So because he had all this power, position, fame, and other things, so he actually could not see. He got, ego, false ego, or puffed up. Because of that reason, Lord Shiva was, he took Lord Shiva as a junior because he was his son-in-law. Therefore, because of the ego and all the power and the prestige and everything, on that base, he was able to make an offense. So these offenses we can see time and time, like Lord Indra, Brahma, even these personalities, they make an offense. They, because of their power, I think, and they get discovered by their false ego, and they're not able to actually see through sometimes. And also, it's in there for us to learn that even these great personalities can make a mistake, and we should not make mistakes. These are also lessons for us. That's what I was saying.
One follow-up question. With in Bhagavad, not Mahabharata, Sri Duryodhana, he knew as well like all the Vaishnava etiquette and how to behave. Also, he was very intelligent, but he would even receive invite Sri Krishna to his house and offer him food and water, but Krishna wouldn't accept it. So why is that? Why wouldn't he accept these things from Duryodhana?
Why did he not accept things? So another question is that from Mahabharata that Duryodhana is receiving Krishna, and he was invited. Krishna did not accept his invitation, and rather he accepted the invitation of Vidura. Correct? And why Lord Krishna did not accept his invitation? Is that the question?
Yeah, well, like Duryodhana, he knew how to, all the etiquette.
Follow the etiquette.
But
when he invited Lord Krishna, I understand that he followed all the etiquettes, and he made all the arrangements on the royal level to welcome Lord Krishna. He made arrangement to cook all the opulent food stuff, and he had all the sea, the whole army, and the music, and everything was just to follow. Etiquette was followed to receive a great personality. But why Lord Krishna did not accept that, and then he went to Vidura, is that the question will be? Lord Krishna is the he Bhaktavatsala. He would rather prefer the devotion of the love of a devotee than somebody's opulence. He's more attracted to love and devotion. And where he could see the comparison is that Duryodhana had offered his everything in opulence, but Lord Krishna is attracted, or he would. So Vidura was his example, and very great devotee, and so he would rather go there. So he actually refused the rituals, and then he accepted his personality. So that is Krishna's pastime, showing then how he actually prefers the love and devotion for devotees. Yes, we should not try making any offenses, kaina, mansa, vacha, anybody, by mind, body, or words. Fortunately, I was, as we understand, it is the lower grade of offense,
something that is yukri, you make an offense to the mind, is a low grade. That the severity is not severe. We should avoid. And the residents of Kali Yuga, any offenses that is made, like Satya Yuga and Treta Yuga and Dwapara Yuga, even the mental offenses or anything ill thinking of those mentally, it would incur a karma. But the concession in the Kali Yuga is that anything, I mean, when somebody, that thinking of mental thinking or ill thinking, it's not considered as higher. It's not even there, it's even forbidden. So, yes, we should avoid any thinking. But if we haven't brought those thoughts into words and physical, until that point you are actually excused in this Kaliyuga. That's why my understanding. So, try to avoid. If you haven't, if you're thinking of something, try to avoid. And if those thoughts have not come into a word and physical, then until that point you are excused. As I understand.
If we have committed, how to get more of that offense?
Sorry?
How to negate, if we have committed offense, how to, what is the price to, what is the atonement?
Go and ask for the forgiveness. Any person you have made an offense to, or if you're thinking of anything, the best form of atonement or best form of it is going to that person and say, "I'm sorry, and I have done this. This is my thoughts. Please excuse me." And that will be the best form of it. Yes, some personalities actually they wanted to fight in the other side, opposite side, because of the whole the systems, or they have either their relationship or something, there is some dharma they have to follow, the etiquette of the battle, so they have to join the other side, and the mother is right that Duryodhana did have an intention behind all this welcoming with the great opulence, that he wanted to have some favor of Krishna. If Krishna is in his favor, then there's a chance that he will have a win battle or not to. So his motive is to gain some influence. Okay. Yes, sir.
Many times in our day-to-day services, offenses happen just part of the service. We don't intend to do it, or that it's just part of the. We are not aware in many times also when the offenses happen. So it is just part of our nature, but part of our passion or whatever aggregation in doing the service that offenses happen. We are not aware at the time that they happen.
As I was mentioning that the severity of offenses are also a degradation. If it's intentionally done, then it attracts higher severity. If it's done out of innocence or mistake or something that you will not wear, the severity of that is less. So we should avoid. Yes, we can make a mistake. We are prone to make a mistake. That's one of the four things we.
Four
faults of humans, and we make a mistake. Mistakes will be made. But the meditated or intentional is higher, and if it's something done in the innocence or out of mistake, as a mistake. But as I was mentioning, if you ask for forgiveness, that is okay, we'll end here. So, Sukantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Sri Prabhupada Ki Jai, Tai Go Pranamani.